What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. All right, you guys, we're just going to get straight into the episode today. We are going to be talking about a very frustrating case.
No.
Some of you might have heard of it because it is recent, sort of, and has gotten recent-ish attention, but it also has kind of fallen out of the media within the last 6 months, so I really want to try to bring some awareness to it and just try to bring it back up again. So today we are going to be talking about the mysterious death of Tamla Horsford, and this was suggested to us by either Carolina or Carolina. Apologies, I don't know the proper way to say it, but she is from Italy, and so I thought that was really cool. She signed it, I think something like, "With love from Italy," so I thought that was really special. So thank you, Carolina or Carolina. Apologies, I don't know the exact way to say it, but we appreciate you listening and your suggestion.
Yeah.
So this case is technically not unsolved. And I'll tell you from now, it's because her death has been ruled an accident. But a lot of people believe that she met with foul play. So let's dive into it. On the night of November 3rd, 2018, 46-year-old John Myers, who is a woman, it's spelled like Jean or Jean, but it, Jean. She had some friends over for a slumber party to celebrate her birthday. So her friend, Stacy Smith, had planned the party and was hosting it at John's house, and the women were going to hang out in their pajamas, watch the LSU-Alabama football game, and just, you know, have like an adult sleepover.
Hey, sounds fun.
So one of the friends, named Nicole, was the first to arrive. She got there around 4 p.m. to start decorating the house, and then everyone else began arriving around 7 p.m. Although the party was originally set to be all women, Jean's boyfriend, 27-year-old Jose Barrera, and another man, Tom Smith, who is Stacy's husband, and then one other husband was also there. They were planning to kind of hang out in the basement, but they ended up coming upstairs and hanging out with the women. I guess when the food came out, they came up to, like, get some food, and they ended up hanging out with them. So it was meant to be, like, an all-women, you know, slumber party, but it was not. So Tamla knew Jean because their sons played football together, and she had met a few of the other women a few times, but she didn't know all of them very well. She kind of knew a few of them, but didn't really know all of them. According to witness accounts, Tamla arrived at the party at around 8:30 p.m. after getting her kids all settled for the night. She had wanted to make sure that everyone was settled in, you know, ready for the night. And apparently she had also even made a casserole for breakfast the next morning. Like, she was a wonderful mom and, like, wanted to make sure everything was set before she went out to have fun.
Yeah, that's a good mom.
So she brought with her a bottle of tequila from Mexico, and apparently all of the women were kind of like bringing bottles of alcohol, different alcohols as gifts for the birthday girl. And apparently the other women watched as she broke the customs seal on the bottle as she opened it. She reportedly encouraged the other women to try it, but they all declined. Jean apparently later told police that she didn't want the bottle of tequila from Tamla because, quote, "The smell of it made me throw up in my mouth." Like,
rude.
Bitch. Yeah. Right?
This is authentic tequila. Like, what?
Yeah. And even if you don't want it, it's a gift to you. Like, re-gift it. But don't,
It's called having some couth.
Yeah, exactly. But despite that, the women were having a great time hanging out, drinking, watching the game. Some called Tamla the life of the parties. Others remembered her being in good spirits even after LSU lost the game. So that's who they were rooting for, and they lost. But, you know, she kind of helped everyone stay in good spirits.
Yeah.
They played Cards Against Humanity, and it sounds like they were also smoking weed, although no one else would admit to it. After the fact, they would all only say that Tamla was smoking.
I remember this case.
Yep. Yep.
I don't know why that triggered it, but.
So a lot of people speculate that more than just Tamla was smoking weed, but we don't know for sure. Tamla even called her husband around 10:30 to check in with him and the kids, and she told him how much fun she was having. So it sounded like everybody was having a good time. Also, no one remembered Tamla being like out of control drunk, just having a good time, but they talked about one of the other women at the party was like way worse and had to be carried to bed and all of that. So no one was like, oh my gosh, Tamla was out of her mind.
Yeah.
Around 1 a.m., the party was starting to die down and several people headed off to bed, but Tamla wasn't ready for her night away from her kids to end, so she stayed up with one of the other women, Bridget Fuller. Bridget's husband ended up picking her up at 1:47 a.m., according to the front door security system, so this left Tamla as the only one awake, and Bridget is reportedly the last person to see Tamla alive. 2 minutes after Bridget left, the back door was opened. And reportedly, Tamla had used this door to go smoke cigarettes on the back balcony throughout the night. So it's presumed that she went outside. It was closed at 1:50, so she like went outside, closed it behind her, and then at 1:57, it was opened again, but it was never closed after that.
Okay.
At 8:30 a.m., Jean Meyer's aunt, Madeline Lombardi, or Madeline, I'm not sure, she lived in the basement of the house, and she had stayed there that night, and she woke up to make some coffee. When she went to make the coffee by the window, she saw Tamla's Dalmatian print pajama onesie outside.
Oh.
And she quickly realized that Tamla was laying in the grass, face down, not moving.
Oh my gosh.
So Madeline got down on her knees and said a prayer, and then, instead of going outside to check on Tamla, she headed upstairs to find Jean, telling her something appeared to be wrong with her, quote, friend from the islands.
So, was this her account of what she did? Or did someone witness her getting down on
her
knees?
This is her account.
Okay, why?
Mm-hmm. We don't know. Only did she do that, but then she didn't go outside to check on her.
Yeah, I mean, that part, I mean, I can kind of, I guess, you want, like, backup, like, someone in case there's, like, a terrible outcome. But, like, I mean, I would go check on the person right away.
Yeah.
But I don't really understand why she felt the need to, like, and I got down on my knees and prayed. Like, that's great if you did that, but.
Yeah, but maybe check on her first.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, there's kind of some, like, variation in what exactly happens. And we'll get into that a little bit more later. Madeline says that she went up to Jean and Jose's room, the boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
and heard water running like someone was taking a shower. And so when she knocked, nobody answered. But then a few minutes later, she went back and knocked again. And that woke Jean and her boyfriend up. So Jean and Jose got dressed, went downstairs, and went outside to check on Tamla. So Jose said that he touched her back to see if she was breathing and also tried to bend her leg, but he couldn't because she was stiff. So they didn't like flip her over. They didn't try CPR. They weren't like freaking out, shaking her.
But bend her leg.
Yeah, but let's bend her leg. Like, I kind of get it because if she has a concussion, you might not want to move her, but it just seems really weird.
Yeah.
So after discovering the site of Tamla themselves, Jean and Jose called 911 at 8:59 a.m. In the 911 call, you can hear both Jean and Jose speaking. At first, it's Jean saying she's not moving, she's not breathing, she's stiff. Jean also mentioned that it looked like she had fallen off the balcony after a night of drinking. So right from the bat, Jean is like, we were drinking last night and it looks like she fell from the balcony.
Hmm.
Then she hands the phone to Jose, who tells the 911 operator that he noticed a small cut on her wrist, saying, quote, I don't know if it's self-inflicted.
So they're planting seeds all over the place.
Exactly.
Interesting.
He also, at one point on the call, after saying she wasn't breathing and she was completely stiff, he said, I don't know if she's breathing. I completely can't tell. So you went from saying she's breathing and stiff to I have no idea if she's breathing.
Right.
Like, just all over the place. to play devil's advocate, we don't know how we would react in that situation. True. You might be freaking out, but it's just weird.
It is.
It also got more confusing because several of the partygoers, including Jose, later told investigators that they had woken up and cleaned that morning before Tamla was found. But both Jean and Jose had said that Madeline had woken them up from being passed out, and that's when they went and found Tamla's body. So Jose said in an interview that he found a cigarette and lighter while cleaning up that morning, but he had told the 911 operator and had previously said that he was woken up to Jean's aunt. So this story is just all over the place. He tries to say, well, when I was on the way to see her body, I found the cigarette. It's just all over the place.
Like no consistency at all. Wow.
Yeah. So before we move on, I want to talk a bit about Tamla. So Tamla was born in St. Vincent and the Grenadines in the Caribbean in 1978, where she and her family lived until they moved to the Bronx in New York in 1989. She met her husband, Leander, and became a stepmom to his daughter from a previous relationship, and together the couple had 5 children. So in 2018, she was 40 years old and was living with her family in Cumming, Georgia, and her kids ranged in age from 4 to 14 years old.
Aww.
She had met many of her friends through the kids' local football league, and she was described as being a loving mom and wife. She was organized and, you know, attended all of her son's football games, was very involved in their schools, and like I said, she met a lot of other moms through her children. One of these moms was her best friend, Michelle Graves, who was not at the party that night, but she'll come back into play later. Now, Tamla was a Black woman, and the area she lived in, Forsyth County, Georgia, is a predominantly white area. It's northeast of Atlanta, and I just want to share a little bit of information about the area. This particular part I found in a Rolling Stone article, and I think it's just interesting background on the area.
Okay.
So Forsyth County has a deep, and this is quoted from the Rolling Stone article, Forsyth County has a deeply rooted history of animosity towards Black people and was home to a, quote, racial cleansing in 1912. So this was when a Black man was blamed for the rape of a white woman, and another was blamed for the rape and beating of a different white woman who died from her injuries. And after that, white mobs descended on local Black homes and businesses. So in the end, the town's 1,098 Black residents, approximately 10% of the population at that time, were driven out. So for decades, the county remained entirely white, and as recently as 1990, there were only 14 Black residents in the entire county.
Wow, that's insane. That just seems wrong on so many levels.
And even in 2018, when this happened, it was still very white, and it was reported that just 4% of the population was Black.
Sheesh.
So Tamla was the only Black woman at this sleepover.
Okay.
The Forsyth County Sheriff's Office, or FCSO, was also kind of known to be not sketchy isn't the right word, but they were known to take
to
care
lean
of their
one
own.
Way. Yeah.
Yeah. So, for example, in 2014, Deputy Coroner Chris Shelton was forced to resign after racist photos of him surfaced. But 2 years later, when the sheriff was reelected, Shelton was once again appointed deputy coroner for the FCSO. So that just kind of gives you an idea of what the sheriff's department was like in this county. It just, you know.
Yeah.
So back to the morning of November 4th, the police arrived at 9:07 a.m., and Tamla was actually pronounced dead pretty soon after that. But she was pronounced dead by investigators, not a medical professional. EMS was never sent to the scene, and they basically were like, she's not alive. Which, like, yes, a normal police officer can probably determine that she's dead.
Yeah.
But that just tells you that, like, what they said on the 911 call made the 911 operator so sure that she wasn't alive that they didn't even send an ambulance.
Right. I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I just want to veg out on my phone and play a fun game. Recently, I discovered June's Journey, which is a hidden object mystery game, and I am obsessed. I am 3 chapters in and I cannot put it down.
I've been loving it too, because not only does it bring out my inner detective, but eventually I'll be able to uncover the mystery behind the case. You play the game as June Parker, a young woman in the 1920s trying to solve her own sister's murder. And the clues that you start finding all point to June's family having some deep, dark secrets.
During the game, you get to create your own estate, which appeals to my inner interior designer. But before we ruin too much for you guys, you have to download June's Journey for yourself. It's free today on iOS and Android devices.
Check out the link to download June's Journey in the show notes of this episode.
They're like, please don't send an ambulance.
Yeah, basically.
Almost, yeah.
So Tamla's body was sent for an autopsy, and the investigators started working the scene, and they started working on the theory that Tamla had fallen from the second story balcony in a tragic accident. So this balcony was 14 feet above the ground, so it definitely could cause intense injuries if someone were to fall off. The autopsy revealed, quote, multiple blunt force injuries and a high blood alcohol level, and that this was likely the result of a fall from the balcony. So that was her official cause of death, multiple right. blunt force injuries. But Tamla's family wasn't convinced and actually called for a second autopsy, and it was set to be conducted by the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. So according to the GBI medical examiner, Tamla sustained several injuries to her head, neck, and torso. Some that were like broken bones, but some that were more superficial, like cuts on her face, wrist, hand, and lower legs. One of her wrists was broken, and they also found a laceration on the right ventricle of her heart. So this type of injury is most often seen in car crashes when someone has sustained an intense injury to the chest. So it had to be like a pretty hard hit to her chest.
Okay. Wow.
Another really interesting thing is that there was no blunt force trauma directly to her face, like no broken facial bones.
But she was found face down.
Yep, she was found face down. There was also a broken vertebrae that is typically caused by the chin hitting something hard and then your head snapping back. So this was really weird because it's like, how could her chin have hit something so hard that her head snapped back? But there's no other broken facial bones.
Right.
But to be fair, you know, again, maybe her chin hit, the head snapped back, and like the face by the time it hit again, I don't know. But it's just, it was weird. So toxicology showed that her BAC was 0.283, which if you didn't know, in the US, the legal driving limit is 0.08. So it was like 3 times the legal driving limit. But she was, you know,
not driving.
She was at a party, so it didn't matter, but
yeah.
It just shows you she definitely had a lot of alcohol in her system. They also found traces of THC and Xanax. So witnesses reported seeing Tamla smoking weed that night, and a bag of weed was found in her purse, so they know that that's where it came from. But the Xanax was not found anywhere at the scene. So if you didn't know, when mixed with alcohol, Xanax is known to cause a slowing of your heart rate, of breathing, motor skills, speeches, and reflexes. So it can be dangerous when mixed with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody recalled seeing Tamla take the Xanax, and nobody claimed to know anything about where she may have gotten it that night. So this led people to believe that something bad had happened, because just with all of this, how would she have gotten so many cuts and abrasions all over her body if there was not a physical struggle?
Right.
Many people thought that those were defensive wounds.
That's what I thought, too, when you said that.
Yeah. There were also questions raised about the position that Tamla was found in. So her legs were extended behind her, with both of her feet pointing to the right. Her right arm was close to her body, while her left arm was found extended and bent at the elbow. So her family and friends questioned how she would have landed like this if she accidentally fell from the balcony alive. Mm-hmm. Like, you normally put your hands out in front of you, and that's not what it was. She fell directly on her chest and face.
Like she was unconscious or something.
Exactly.
Or placed there.
The only thing is, if she had enough Xanax to, like, mixed with the alcohol, maybe she just didn't have enough, like, motor reflexes to do it, but still.
Because you can, like, black out if you take Xanax and drink alcohol.
Right. So maybe it's something like that.
Yeah.
So her case was being investigated by the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office for the next couple of months. But while Tamala's family and friends and members of the community believed that she had possibly met with foul play, the FCSO was definitely leaning towards her death being ruled an accident. Now, there's a few criticisms from this investigation. One is that there were no photos taken during either of the autopsies, which is not normal practice.
Mm, yeah.
Another is that there were actually two different lighters and two kinds of cigarettes found at the house, despite everyone else at the party insisting that Tamala was the only smoker.
Mm.
So it was just really weird. And also, none of the cigarettes were ever tested for anything.
First of all, these people are wrong for trying to make her look so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, saying she was the only one smoking weed, she was the only one smoking cigarettes. Like,
mm-hmm.
You're all grown-ups.
And they were really pushing that, trying to make her look bad.
Oh, yeah.
So the interviewers with the other partygoers are also wild and all over the freaking place.
Mm-hmm.
So I've talked a little bit about how Jose's story changed, but I want to go a little bit more into that and some of the other interviews. So the interviews were actually done a couple of weeks after Tamala's death, and many of them happened at Jean Meyer's home, which is just really bizarre.
Yeah.
And the next part you might remember, this is what triggered, like, me remembering it, because mm-hmm. it's just wowza. So Madeline Lombardi, who was the first one who saw Tamala, the aunt, the one who prayed and went and got her niece, she was being interviewed at Jean's house. And in the middle of the interview, Jean just walked right in. I'm going to read you the transcript from this part of the interview. So Jean says to the police officers, "I'm going to start charging y'all rent."
Ah,
I know. And then Detective Christian says, "Get out of my head," which is, like, weird, but maybe he meant get out of my hair.
Oh.
Jean then says, "Look, I just went and got y'all gift cards." She says, "Then I was told I shouldn't because it would look bad if I gave you something before the case is closed." Mm-hmm. She said, "And it's very typical because I figure all the cops love Dunkin' Donuts, right?" And then Detective Christian says, "You may have something," which, like, again, we don't know what that means. I kind of thought, like, oh, he meant, like, oh, you may have something. Like, yeah, you might.
Yeah, you're onto something there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then Jean says, "Do you need me or can I go upstairs and get ready for this funeral?" Tamala's funeral.
This funeral. And mm-hmm. why are you buying cops anything? Like,
mm-hmm.
that seems really suspicious that you're bribing them with
mm-hmm.
Dunkin' mm-hmm. gift cards, which, like, if that's all it takes, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Damn.
So after Jean asked that, Detective Christian said, "Go do your thing." And then Jean says, "Okay, perfect." Like,
first of
how
all,
are you
the
so
first
casual?
Thing- Yeah, exactly. They should have said, "Get the hell out. We're conducting a, like, it's not a formal interview because it's not at the station, but still."
But these are the interviews that they did with the potential witnesses.
Yep.
So, yeah, this is just super sketchy. And that's actually all I'm going to read directly from the transcripts because I don't want to come off as, like, biased one way or another by how I'm portraying them myself. I was listening to one podcast that, like, it was very biased one way, which, like, I think a lot of us can agree that that's probably what we are all thinking, but
right.
I don't want to, like, come off either way. But
just
you actually
state the facts.
Can...
Yeah.
Exactly. But you actually can read all of them on justiceforTam.org, and I'll link that in the show notes. So if you want to go read them, I mean, there's several, and each of them are, like, 30 to 45 pages, so there's a lot. But if you want to read them, I will link that for you guys. There was just definitely a lacking sense of professionalism in these interviews, though. So it had been mentioned by Jean and Jose that there were security cameras in the house. So they stated this, and it's on record. But when investigators tried to get the footage from that day and the surrounding days was just gone. Of course.
Of course it was, yeah.
And later, it came out that there was a photo of an email that was sent from Jean to Detective Christian, who she called by his first name, Mike, basically saying, I must have accidentally deleted the footage.
So she's on first name basis with these people. Does she know them? Did she know them prior?
Huh. Nope. And one of the things that's talked about a lot with the transcripts that, like, I'm just going to say this is all speculation, but a lot of people say in her interview, it sounds like she's, like, really flirting with them and, like, you know, kind of trying to get on their good side and all of that. I mean, even just calling him by his first name, like, no.
Yeah. That's some psychology. She's trying to achieve something by doing that. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So in December 2018, about a month after Tamela died, Jose Barrera, Jean's boyfriend, was actually fired from his job at the Forsyth County Court. He was fired for accessing the incident report of Tamela's death several times. So this raised a lot of questions about him and his potential involvement. Mm-hmm. People were like, why were you accessing it? But he just was fired, and to this day, he hasn't been charged.
That's wrong.
Yeah. So despite all of this suspicious activity and, you know, just unanswered questions, on February 20th, 2019, Tamela Horsford's death was ruled an accident and the investigation was closed. So the FCSO said, quote, it was a party. They were drinking. She was drinking. Most of the partygoers had gone to bed at that time, and she was on the deck alone. They also noted that her injuries did not align with foul play.
How? It doesn't add up.
No, it doesn't. So after this, everything about Tamela's case went pretty quiet. Family and friends did not believe that her death was an accident, but there wasn't much that they could do about it. Like, the police ruled it closed, and that was it. That was until the George Floyd protests in June of 2020. So that kind of sparked discussion about cases, especially of Black victims in predominantly white areas.
Okay.
On June 5th, 2020, the Horsford's family attorney, a man named Ralph Fernandez, wrote a letter to Leander, Tamela's husband, claiming that his team's investigations into the details of the case strongly suggested that she had died by homicide. So he said that the description of Tamela's injuries were consistent with a physical struggle, but because there were no autopsy photos, they couldn't investigate this further. The FCSO and the GBI claimed that autopsy photos were taken, but Fernandez released another public statement that included records of multiple attempts to secure those autopsy photos that were just ignored, even while other requests were fulfilled. So the GBI responded to this by saying that the photos were taken and couldn't be released because of a missing release of from Tamela's next of kin. But Fernandez says that that was not introduced until after he went public. So it's very, like, suspicious, and it seems like they're trying to just brush it under the rug.
Yeah, and she deserves a proper investigation, even if it is an accident, which it small chance very well could be, I feel like.
Yeah, it definitely could be.
My personal thought on it. But yeah, she deserves a full investigation, and she did not receive one, at least at that time.
No, not at all. So as far as I could find, the autopsy photos that apparently exist have never been provided to Fernandez or the family. So also in the letter to Leander, Fernandez said, quote, witness statements are in conflict. A potential subject handled the body as well as the evidence prior to law enforcement arriving. Evidence was disposed of and no inquiry followed. The scene was not preserved. And this is all true. The scene wasn't secured. At least one of the witnesses, Jose Barrera, said that he had moved her leg or tried to move her leg.
Yeah.
And not only was that initial scene compromised, but no real forensic testing was done, since investigators pretty much believed from the start that her death was an accident.
Right.
A few days after Leander received this letter, a journalist published it, and Tamela's name and case re-entered the public eye. So a Change.org petition to reopen the investigation into her death was launched and gained almost 600,000 signatures.
Wow.
On June 12th, 2020, the Forsyth County Sheriff, Ron Freeman, sent a letter requesting that her case be reopened and investigated by the GBI. And 6 days later, the GBI agreed to reopen the case. And over the next year, that reinvestigation supposedly happened. But on July 28th, 2021, the GBI concluded their investigation and decided not to pursue any criminal charges.
This is reminding me of Kendrick Johnson's case. How they say, like, they say, yeah, we're going to open it and we're going to reinvestigate it. But it's like, what do they, like, what are they really, who's holding them accountable? You know, like, who's, no one's checking on them.
It's probably just the detective reading through case files and saying, yep, everything was accurate.
It's ridiculous.
So some, despite this being like them saying it's still an accident, some interesting things did come out of this reinvestigation and their report. Mm-hmm. So first of all, there was some conflict about the position that Tamla was found in, and that was discussed in the report. So both Jean and Jose recalled finding Tamla with both of her arms at her side. But when police arrived at the scene, her left arm was bent out to the side, like I explained earlier. Mm-hmm. So what's interesting about this is some people said possibly she had fallen or was placed or whatever, and then they tried to move her arm to make it look like it was an accident, make it look like she had tried to break her fall or something.
Right.
So apparently, a few days after Tamla's death, Jose Barrera had admitted to moving her arm to check for a pulse at the advice of the investigator on the case at the time, Lieutenant Andy Collin.
So according to him, we can ascertain that rigor had set in and he was unable to move her leg, but he was able to move her arm, which granted I get, arms are smaller, maybe a little bit more, you know, the ability to move them is a little easier, but even still.
Yeah, very bizarre.
Suspicious. And was there any livor mortis that would indicate like blood pooling? Because if her arm was down by her side, it would be on the front, and if they moved it, it would be on the back.
On the back. Yeah. From everything they've reported, they haven't reported any livor mortis. And one interesting thing about rigor is it was, so I forget the actual time periods, but because it was so cold out, that slows down rigor mortis. Mm-hmm. So it definitely could have just been starting to set in. So it's definitely possible that, like, her leg might have been stiffer and her arm might have not been. Right. But also, he may have never moved her leg. Or, you know, we don't know for sure.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm calling bullshit.
Yeah. So he admitted, though, a few days later to moving her arm to check for a pulse. And he said that this was because Lieutenant Annie Collin told him. But in an interview with GBI Special Agent Derek Glasgow, Barrera denied moving her arm. And when the GBI confronted him with Collin's report, Barrera insisted that he had not moved her arm, saying, "There is no way I checked for a pulse." So his story is just all over the place.
Yeah.
There's also information that came out that Collin and Barrera had worked together at the courthouse prior to Tamla's death.
Oh.
So these two might have known each other.
Yeah.
Apparently, the assistant DA had previously given Collin Barrera's cell phone number within the context of helping Barrera find a job. So, you know, just could be fishy.
Yeah.
The other thing that came from this report was about the lead investigator, Mike Christian, who I talked about earlier in, like, the interview and all of that. Mm-hmm. So he actually resigned from the FCSO in October 2020 due to an internal affairs investigation into him. He was apparently having extramarital affairs with several women who he was giving, allegedly, confidential information about his cases to.
What?
So in January 2021, he came out and said that he had chosen to end a relationship with this person he was having an affair with, and out of anger, she had chosen to go to the sheriff about his alleged misconduct.
Oh, okay.
But the IA investigation concluded that he had violated his oath of office and neglected his duty, and the details of this all came out in that second GBI investigation. So the GBI spoke with two women who claimed to have been sent details, in one case, photos of Tamla's case.
What? Oh my gosh, what an idiot.
Yeah. So one ex-girlfriend recalled Christian sharing the results of Tamla's toxicology report and his suspicion that the body had been moved. She also recalled Christian telling her that he did not believe Tamla's death was an accident.
Well, that's
and then
good.
Another woman said that Christian had sent her photos of Tamla's body at the crime scene.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's, yeah, that's a big no-no. All of that's a big no-no, but especially that part, I feel like.
Yeah. This woman also told the GBI that Christian told her that he'd discovered that there had been a phone call between Jose Barrera and Andy Collin before the 911 call that morning.
What?
So according to the woman, Christian had suspected that Collin had helped the people at the house come up with a story. But unfortunately, the GBI could not confirm that these calls happened, noting that there was no activity on Barrera's phone between 12 a.m. and 10 a.m. on the day that Tamala died.
Maybe he called from a different phone.
Yeah. Definitely interesting.
Hmm.
There were also three screenshots of Snapchat messages that were obtained by the FBI that were from Christian to his girlfriends. Hmm. One was sent on the morning of November 1st, the day that Tamala was found. And it appears to show Christian joking about notifying Tamala's husband of her death, saying, quote, and there's screenshots of this. Hello, sir. I know we've never met, but I'm here to tell you that your wife and mother of your six children is dead. Oh, yes. I am happy to report that she was really, really drunk, trip landed face down in the backyard. And I know you have fun memories enjoying corralling these six boys who are now going apeshit. So he's, like, saying that this is, like, he's, like, joking around. This is That's how he's going to notify. Yeah.
That is disgusting.
Yeah. Then he sent another message a few weeks later that I'm not going to read because it's even worse. It's racist. It's disgusting. Mm. I won't read it, but
just yeah. know it exists. Yeah.
Yeah. And in one person, or in one particular part of that, it says, it's a nice rainy day, good for digging shallow graves by the roadside. But graves is capitalized, and Fernandez, the lawyer for Tamala's family, believes that graves is in reference to Michelle Graves, one of Tamala's friends, her best friend. And Michelle is especially critical of the investigation and has been extremely outspoken about her belief that the people at the party were either involved or know more than they're sharing.
Yeah, good for her.
Yeah, so they think that that's what that reference was. Also, shortly after Tamala's death, Jean tried to send Michelle a cease and desist, basically trying to get her to shut up. Thankfully, it was dismissed, but yeah. So after this all came out, Christian admitted to the GBI that he did send those messages, but said that they were sarcasm and in poor taste. So he was like, yeah, I did send those, but you know, I was just trying to be funny and like, okay, it was in poor taste.
Yeah, okay.
However, he did deny sending any photos of the crime scene and having any knowledge of Barrera calling Collin before the 911 call.
Hmm.
He also told the GBI that he does believe that Tamala's death was an accident.
Sometimes when I don't feel like reading or watching TV, I just want to sit back and play a fun game on my phone. And I recently started playing June's Journey, and when I tell you I'm loving it, that is an understatement. I'm already on the fourth chapter, and I've only been playing for a few days. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game, and I love it because it brings out my inner detective. You play as June Parker in the 1920s trying to solve her sister's murder. It's so much fun to travel the world of the 20s looking for clues that are indicating that June's family has some dark secrets. You also get to create and decorate your own estate island, which I loved because it made me feel really fancy and important. In my last chapter, I discovered a big family secret and there was an unexpected death, but I won't ruin it for you. You can discover your inner detective and play yourself by downloading June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. You can find the link to download June's Journey for free in the show notes of this episode.
So did they have proof of these pictures being sent to these women?
I don't think they could find proof.
Okay.
And then the other woman was, it was basically stuff that he had told her, so they couldn't just in person, so they couldn't prove it. So that was kind of the end of that. But there's a lot of questions raised about him and just about how the whole investigation was handled. The GBI was also unable to determine where Tamala got the Xanax that night. There was apparently one person at the party who had a prescription for Xanax, and while she at first denied sharing it with anyone, evidence later showed that she had shared with someone else and had admitted to it, but she maintained that she had not given any to Tamala. So no conclusion on the Xanax was reached by the GBI during their reinvestigation. They just didn't come to a conclusion and it didn't matter.
Wow.
So despite All of this being dug up by the reinvestigation, the GBI still concluded that Tamla Horsford died by falling off the balcony in a tragic accident. Tamla's family, though, is still adamant that something bad happened and is not giving up their hope for answers. There are a lot of questions revolving the motive around Tamla's alleged murder. Some people believe it could have been racially motivated. Others believe it was an accident, but then was covered up by people at the party. There's a theory that it was sexually motivated because, according to Leander's best friend, two of the couples at the party that night were swingers. So this man was like, my first thought was that someone had tried to initiate something and something went wrong, but there's been no evidence found to support this theory. The family's lawyer, Ralph Fernandez, is still working to investigate the case and find something that can reopen it again. And Tamla's family is still hopeful that one day they will have answers and that justice will be served. And that is the case of Tamla Horsford.
That is so sad.
I know. It did gain a little bit of traction around like August, September of last year as people were talking about like the GBI reclosing it, but it's kind of fallen out of the media again, like I said at the top of the episode. So I'm really wanting to get this out there, and you know, her family's still fighting for answers. So the more attention and awareness it can get, the more likely that will happen.
And I feel like this is the type of case that it's still like kind of new. And if something more did happen, somebody's going to open their mouth.
I think so, too. I definitely think it's a possibility.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, yeah, you can kind of follow along with any updates at justicefortam.org. And that's also where you can find a ton of information about the case, all of those transcripts of the interviews that have been released publicly and all of that. But that's all I have for you guys today. I honestly don't know what I think happened. I think it was either an accident and people are not saying what they know, or something bad happened. But I definitely think that there's more than what has been said.
I agree with that.
So yeah, that's all I have for you guys today. Please go look at her photos on Instagram and Facebook. Share them. Share this case with family, friends, anybody, because just getting her name out there can be really helpful.
Yeah.
So yeah, we will see you guys on Thursday with a brand new episode. And until then, keep it human.
Bye.